This is Guildcast, episode 19, for March 18th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast, everyone. I'm your host, Sean, and this week I will be discussing green items. And because of the biggest game glitch and shutdown in Guild Wars history, I'll be focusing a lot on the merchant bug and the great server rollback of March 13th, or as my guild leader Morik Nightwind called it, Guild Wars' own Black Monday. First off, though, there's been a few generous people I've met in the game this week, including Chaos Dark Phoenix, Deathbringer Inzi, and the Shining Shield, who have all contributed some great contest items, all of which are now on the newly updated contest prize page off of the main guildcast.com website. Also, other people I've met in the game were Death by Pixie Dust, Malika Weihain, Dante of Acheron, Captain Bone, Warrior Zeros, Dashing Lorelei, and the Tater Slayer. And if I've missed anyone or mispronounced anyone's name more than I usually do this time, I apologize, especially this week, because I've become addicted to tombs farming, and I'm usually found playing my Order's Necro down there. But if anyone's played an Order Necro, they know that it's basically a constant spam of four or five spells over and over again. So responding to people and or writing down their names was almost impossible this time. Plus, I think I'm getting to the point lately where I don't know if I've talked to someone before or if it might be someone using another character name but the same person, you know, things like that. So I might stop doing this little part where I say hi to people in the game unless it's requested. Then I'll do it. And that's not to say I don't want people still saying hi to me, because even though I may be busy, I still enjoy hearing from listeners, but I just may not announce it. So going over the game updates this week, there's mainly been a lot of new content that ArenaNet has added relating to factions and the preview weekend next week. So I'm sure if you've logged in the last week or so, you've noticed all the long download times when you first log in. So also on Thursday, March 9th, there were the following updates. In arena combat, when players enter the random arenas through an international district, they will now be placed on teams consisting of other players who entered through an international district. Previously, players were always placed on teams with other players from their own territory. Teams in both random and team arenas can now be matched against opponents from anywhere in the world. The guild combat updates include: Guild Lords will now walk instead of run out of the base at victory or death to give their teams a better chance to keep up with them. Updated NPCs in the Isle of the Dead Guild Hall map so that they will now patrol the low ground near the flag at victory or death. And for the skill training update, all skill trainers can now sell you any non-elite skill that you have previously unlocked on your account. Skill updates, they fix the skill Dwarven Battle Stance so that it only causes hammer attacks to interrupt the target, not other types of melee attacks. They fixed the skill Mantra of Recall so that it only provides its energy boost to the owner of the skill. Previously, a player could get an energy boost if he removed Mantra of Recall from an enemy while he also had the same enchantment applied to himself. And they also fixed the skill Feral Lunge so that its damage and duration correctly match last week's update notes. For item updates, they restored the functionality of the Bloodstained Boots. They updated While Hexed Shields on Collectors so that they are equivalent to those on the PvP creation screen. They updated role-playing character creation so that all professions start with helmets or headgear. They updated the / pre-order command to provide Guild Wars factions pre-order items to those who have applied a faction's pre-order key to their account. They corrected the crafting costs of the Monk's Aesthetic Fissure of Woe Armor and the Necromancer's Scar Pattern Fissure of Woe Armor to include Obsidian Shards. They added new artwork for Elemental Staves. They changed the name of Shells to Chitin Fragments. And for map and quest updates, they removed the portal effect from the closed East Gate at Lion's Arch. They tightened the guard security on the ramp in Hero's Ascent so that characters cannot sneak past the guards. They corrected the art being used for Commander Rezhang in Hero's Ascent. They increased the maximum allowed party size in the Great Temple of Balthazar and Isle of the Nameless to 8. they fixed a bug that allowed characters who had not completed the Path of the Zacian Elite quest to enter the Zacian Elite outpost. And for AI updates, they fixed a bug that caused henchmen and pets to be left behind or to run back to their original locations after cinematics. They updated AI so that creatures and henchmen no longer try to heal or enchant spirits. They also did some quite uninteresting audio and interface fixes that if you're really interested in learning about, you can check them out on the GuildWars.com website under the Game Updates section. And an undocumented update during this patch was the introduction of the Shadow Blade. For some time, the Shadow Blade didn't exist as an item a player could acquire. They could be seen in the Fissure of Woe carried by Shadow Warriors. And these weapons were highly coveted during beta, and for some time only appeared in the form of Victo's Blade, a unique item dropped only in the ruins of the Tomb of Primeval Kings by the final bosses, the Darknesses. But since this update, Shadow Blades drop as player items in the Fissure of Woe, and they go for a lot of money. So then on Friday, March 10th, 2006, they had another update. They fixed the Glint statue in Drachner's Forge so that it responds properly to player actions, which is the kneel. They fixed a bug with the end of Sanctum K, which caused the White Mantle to show up too early or not at all. They restored the skill Signet of Resurrection to its normal behavior. And then on Tuesday, March 14th, 2006, they fixed a bug that caused some users to experience sound dropouts. They fixed a number of audio glitches and performance problems in the Fire Island chain, and they fixed an issue that caused Direct Song to stop playing music after the first song. And now after all that, onto the update that caused all the mayhem. On Monday, March 13th, 2006, they corrected an error in Heroes Ascent map that prevented teams from progressing beyond the first level. This update erroneously introduced a severe bug that caused prices at all traders to be reset. Most runes and rare crafting materials were set to 250 gold. As soon as players found out about this, they rushed to the traders and purchased copious amounts of these usually fairly expensive items. Within 30 minutes, the matter had raised enough red flags that ArenaNet moved to correct the problem. They disabled all traders, all of which were emptied of their goods already. Then shortly after, map travel was disabled. The entire global network of game servers was shut down for maintenance around 6 p.m. Eastern Time, or 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. The servers were back up around 1:20 a.m. Eastern Time, or 6:20 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. The following notice on the official Guild Wars Network news page on their website notes the issue and the implemented remedy. Due to a server error, Guild Wars experienced an unintentional reset of the traders. For nearly an hour, traders were selling items at unrealistically low prices. Due to the harmful impact that such an event would cause to the game economy, we are rolling back the entire state of the game to shortly before the problem began, that is, to 1 p.m. Pacific Time or 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. We estimate that the game will be accessible at approximately 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time tonight, or 7 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Later on, the following note appeared on the website and on the game's login screen. As you may be aware, we experienced some technical issues that resulted in the need to conduct an approximately one-hour rollback of Guild Wars on Monday, March 13th. What prompted our decision to do the rollback was the fact that the game economy was at risk, because during a brief window of opportunity, a huge number of items had been purchased for ridiculously low prices. This infusion of items into the economy would have devalued all the items in the game and would have crippled the game economy. We have an absolute commitment to take whatever means are necessary to protect the game economy, and by extension to protect the items that you possess on your account. We apologize for any inconvenience that the rollback may have caused. We will continue to investigate the situation to assure that a repeat of today's incident does not take place. Thank you for your understanding, the Guild Wars team. Now, for those of you who experienced this, it was quite a sight to behold. I had logged on just as it started, and a guildie told us about it. When I first got to the traders, it wasn't too busy. I went to Lion's Arch first, and several very high-ticket items were mistakenly set at 250 gold, as was reported. The prices steadily rose from supply and demand, and within 20 to 30 minutes, items such as superior absorption runes and things like that started disappearing off the shelves. Then, not long after that, the merchants were sold out. It was completely crazy, and it actually reminded me of this time I bought a digital camera at Walmart on their day after Thanksgiving sale. It's kind of the same situation. This was, of course, about the time when ArenaNet discovered the problem and started taking action. New connections were refused, and people who were already in the game kept getting error messages about it being unable to reconnect to server. Several people even stayed in the game trying to figure out a way to beat this and to try to keep their 250 obsidian shards that they just bought and planned on reselling. But alas, the server was rolled back, and after about a 7-hour downtime, all was back to normal. This, of course, left a bad taste in several players' mouths. So I went on GuildWarsGuru.com and asked the players there what progress or legitimate items they lost from the rollback. Many people said that they were either working or loading up on shards and superior runes, but this is what some others had to say. I was playing my recently ascended Ranger Mesmer. Did Dragon's Lair for the Mesmer Elite skill cap just for the unlock, already had the Ranger one. Did the beginning of Dunes again to unlock the Mesmer Elite. Did a couple other Elite unlocks in the South Shiver Peaks. Did Thunderhead Keep with Henchies. Talked to the King, only to get locked up with the Error 13 message. I didn't buy a single thing at any trader's. Kept checking back until I found out about the rollback. Got extremely angry about ANET's apparent inability to reset goods and gold without also resetting missions, quests, and unlocks. But decided not to bother flaming about it. Played Mech 4 instead of GW. Logged in the next day to find the character back at Dragon's Lair. So after work, I did Thunderhead Keep again with Henchies, then helped a guildie with some earlier missions. I still have yet to regrind all the elite skills unlocked that I previously did. Another one says, I was with my fourth party trying to complete an infusion run so I could get my newly fixed bloodstained boots for my minion master infused. After some chaotic half-fight, half-run tries that led to humiliating demises, I convinced a group that we really needed to fight. We finally get infused, I'm thinking, cool, back to farming. Can't map to war camp. I get the error message. I think, whatever, I'll just log back in. After about 10 tries, I actually do get in, and the guild chat is going nuts. Superior absorptions, vigors, shards, 250 each. So I try to switch to a character that has some empty inventory slots and gold to burn. 20 tries later, I get into Amnoon 2, US. I managed to get 11 shards at 250, that was all. All runes, rare crafting materials, even normal crafting materials and dyes are blocked. Then trading gets blocked, as well as mapping. A little later, guild chat gets strangely blocked. Seems people are either leaving or getting kicked out of Amnoon 2, but I'm still there, reading the forums, thinking, if I can stay in game, perhaps I won't get rolled back, and I get to keep my meager 11 shards. Eventually, there are about 5 people left in Amnoon 2, and I wonder if I could farm while waiting, perhaps fighting to Augury and doing queen runs. But after leaving town, I spawn back in town, rubber banding, they call it, and I see there is nothing I can productively do while waiting, so I go out for dinner. I come back, I'm still on, the first deadline is approaching, but I eventually do get the boot. New deadline 3 hours later is set, but only takes 2. I get in, meager 11 shards go poof. I didn't miss the 11 shards as much as not being able to play for 8 hours on a Monday, my second day of the weekend. And this next one I thought was pretty clever. They say, oh, I was advising my mates to ID all their golds, as it wouldn't matter anyway, because they get rolled back. That was while we were all still in game after rollback was announced. Something I didn't think about. Another one, they say, I had just got to the Granite Citadel after battling my way from the Iron Mines with my new warrior. To say that I was a little miffed would be an understatement, but I do understand the need. The last thing I or anyone else would want is for the superior runes to double in price because they'd all been bought up. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And for this last response to my thread was probably my favorite of all. He says, I was soloing Glint with my Mesmer. It was a hard-fought battle, and my nice 15k clothes got torn a bit. Back and forth, the battle raged, spell versus counter, and eventually she was down to her last hit point. But I had run out of energy and had no heals left. Actually, I didn't have any heals at all, but with my dying breath, I attacked with my cane to finish her off and clicked, and dope! Now she has to be killed all over again. It's a pretty descriptive little battle scene there. But I'll put up a link in the show notes for today for that thread. Now, Amber Red has sent me something to announce regarding the Factions Collector's Edition and his recent guild change. And this is what he says. I'm sorry to say that my guild, Strength of the Worlds, did not go too well. For now I have left it, and the guild known as the Legion of Synergy Triumphalism, or Lost, has been more than supportive to me as I was looking for another guild to join. Keep in mind that although my guild has been disbanded now, it doesn't mean that it won't return one day. It will, probably, in the future, when the time is right for it to rise again. Now on to the news of the new world. ArenaNet has finally announced that the Factions campaign will be officially released worldwide on April 28, 2006. Because of that, articles have been popping up all over the internet. After a while of browsing through them, I have chosen a few interesting bits of information that I believe are most significant at this point. First off, there's a map of what Cantha might look like, posted in the Guild Wars unofficial forums. Now, I don't know how authentic it may be. At first glance, I thought it was looking at a zoomed-in area of the Tyrian map. Turned out that I was wrong. There's also a dance animation for the Assassin and the Ritualist, which have been announced in the same article, which will be found in the notes about the show on guildcast.com. Now, I went to the official Guild Wars website and looked at their factions content for both the special editions and the standard editions in both North America and Europe. Like the original, Guild Wars factions will come in two CDs. The standard editions will include the CDs, a game manual, and a quick reference card. The European version will have a double-sided poster of a ritualist and an assassin, as well as a collectible plastic game activation card. The special editions contain the standard packages in both regions, as well as a soundtrack CD, a double-sided poster map of Cantha, and factions poster, an art book, a desk calendar, a mouse pad, a sticker set, a special in-game dance emote for the Assassin and the Ritualist, and a bonus music key. The European version will have everything mentioned in addition to a cloth picture. Knowing that, I'm seriously considering ordering the European version from overseas. Cantha has come closer than ever. It is time to sharpen your weapons and refine your armors while we wait. Soon, we shall go to a merciless land where blood will be spilled and nobody will ever be the same. May the strength of the worlds be with you. Now, if you want to email Amber Red about anything relating to his upcoming segment on guild alliances and factions in Chapter 2, you can email him at amber@guildcast.com. That's amber@guildcast.com.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. As you know, there was a rollback on Monday, which Sean is going to discuss quite a bit. I'm not really going to say anything about it because I didn't see much of it. I was at work when the whole thing went down. But I have to say, and it might not be popular, but I'm pleased with the way that ArenaNet handled it. Yeah, I'll admit that if I had been online at the time, I probably would have snatched up as many items from the traders as I could have too. But still, I know I wouldn't have been surprised that they ended up taking it all away anyway. The way I see it is like if everyone was working hard to buy a nice car, and then suddenly Maseratis and Ferraris and all the super expensive cars only cost $100 and the whole market was flooded with a whole ton of them. What would you do? You would have a couple of options. You could either go and buy one of these supposedly cheap cars while it would be less expensive than it normally would have been, the sellers would be still making a killing off of it. Or you could say, oh, well, you know, my little Miata's not as cool as your car, but at least I earned it, you know? So it would have done crazy things to the economy. I am glad that ArenaNet did the rollback, and fortunately, it was only a small amount of time that they had to correct. I do feel sympathetic, however, to anyone who was playing legitimately at the time. Anyone who was leveling, doing missions, farming, PvPing, or anybody who had attained something legitimately that ended up also getting taken away during that time. I'm sorry to hear that. That sucks. I know it's no consolation, but you know, what could ArenaNet do? I think they made the right decision for what was the best for the entire in-game world, and I respect them for upholding that for all of us. So, let's talk about items in general now that things are back to normal. Usually, here's the basic rule. All buyers want to buy for as low as they can, and all sellers want to sell for as high as they can. Naturally, it's just like the real world. So there's usually a middle ground that you can find. If there's a unique item that usually sells for around 10 to 15K, the buyer will want to buy it for 10, and the seller will want to sell it for 15. So there's usually a little give, and you should be able to trade it for within that range. You can also usually haggle with people a little bit, but I don't like to push it too much. There was someone who was selling an item for 10k, and I whispered them and said, "Hey, will you take 9? And they said, "Sure." Other times I've tried to do the same thing, and the seller said, "No, the price is set at 10. And then I don't try to talk them down more, because I know I wouldn't like it if someone tried to do that to me if I were selling. I figure you ought to treat others the way that you'd like to be treated, so I try to be courteous of others whether I'm buying or selling. One thing I don't like when I'm selling is if someone wants to buy something and they say, "Oh, I don't have the cash, but I'll trade you all these items." And then I politely say, "No, that's all right. I don't want your items. I'm just selling for gold." But then they keep persisting. That's not cool. The only time I think it would be okay to do this is if you're offering ecto or black dye or something that has a high and somewhat fixed value, and if it's something easy to resell. If I'm trying to get gold, trading for items that I can't resell is not worth anything to me. You just end up with a bunch of worthless green items. I've got a couple greens that I can't get rid of, not even to people who want to usually buy unwanted greens for 1k. Even they reject my sad little items. Oh well. The only unique item that I know of right now that sells for over 100k is Victo's Bulwark, and even that's coming down in price now. But there are some rare items that can sell for well over that if they've got perfect stats. There used to be no set way to buy something that was worth that much, and one solution, I think it was GW Online, but one of the moderators or administrators or something offered to be a mediator for any expensive purchases. The idea was that if someone were selling something for, say, 150k, the buyer would give 100k to the third-person mediator, and then the buyer and seller would trade the item for the remainder, being the 50k. Then the third-person mediator would give the original 100k to the seller, so then you would have all the money transferred over to the seller, and the buyer would have the item. It was a good idea, but the drawback to this is that you would always have to have a third person around who both parties trusted, and I think it would be way too easy for two people to get together and scam people out of 100k left and right. So the usual way for people to trade things that cost this much is to trade 100k and any remainder is paid in ecto. Ecto has a somewhat fixed value, so it's considered that it's worth a certain amount, and it's easy to resell, so it's like a form of currency nowadays. I've noticed that although there is a range of how much something usually sells for, it can vary quite a bit from town to town. You might see a green item sell for one price in Tombs, and another price in DWC, and then you might see another price in Drox. Also, you might see different prices even in the same city, but between districts. For example, there might be three people in District 1 all trying to sell the same item. So they can get into a little bit of a bidding war, and they might try to sell just a little bit lower than the next guy so that they can get the sale. But in another district, there might be only one guy selling the item. And although there might be less buyers in the next district, they could still ask for the higher end of whatever the price range is, simply because there's the apparency that they have no competition. So if I'm looking to buy something, I will check different places and see what's happening where, because it changes with the market, and even with what time of day it is, and with who happens to be buying and selling at any given time. One thing that annoys me when I'm trying to buy something is if the seller changes districts too fast. One time, I saw something advertised on the screen, and I said, "Oh, I want to buy that." So I whispered the person pretty much immediately and said, "I want to buy it." And they said, "Okay, where are you?" And I said, "I'm near storage." And they said, "No, what district?" So I said, "Oh, okay, I'm in District 2. And then they said, "What city?" And I was thinking, man, how many locations have you spammed in the last 60 seconds since I last saw you here? So when I sell something, I advertise in one location for a short bit, and then if I don't get any response, I'll go to another location. It makes it easier on the buyer, and I think it's easier for you as a seller rather than, and I know you want to like get as many people to see your advertisement as much as possible, but you know, sometimes people in District 3 don't want to see your trade chat. So that's my little pet peeve for the day. Sorry. Personally, I can't wait until we see this auction house that Gail's been promising. I'm hoping that there will be some kind of option where you can drop off an item and just leave a price tag on it, and then somebody else could come along and view it and buy it. I think that would be great. I currently use RPG traders, but that still involves the trader and seller having to find each other online and making the trade, which works, but you have to coordinate and all that. But if the auction house enables you to sell even when you're off doing something else, I think that would be awesome. We won't know anything for sure until it's actually here, though, but I could still hope. There's an old scam that still goes around, and since I still see people trying to do it, people must still fall for it occasionally. It's the old swapping platinum for gold trick, and I think Sean's talked about it before, but I notice it in TOA most of the time. A person will say, "Want to buy Ecto for 8K, and they try to give 8 gold instead. Luckily, there's usually other people around that are saying, "Don't trade with that person, they'll scam you." So hopefully this warns people who might make that mistake. I've even fallen for this trick once. I was selling crafting materials to a bunch of people, and one person was supposed to give me 1 platinum and 200 gold, but instead they gave me 1 platinum and 2 gold. And since I was doing multiple transactions and selling to lots of people, I just saw the 2 and clicked. And then I realized afterwards it wasn't the right amount. So, you learn from your mistakes. Fortunately, mine wasn't an expensive mistake. But all I'm saying is, there's buyers who will still try to pull this scam, and I guess if we keep talking about it, more people will become aware of it, and maybe one day it'll diminish. Maybe. Now, trading anything that is not your usual item for gold or item for item involves some risk. Running, for example. The runner doesn't know if they're going to get paid, and the person buying the run doesn't know if they're really going to receive their run to completion. So like Sean said in an earlier episode, there are ways to sort of find common ground, like paying at a halfway point or things like that. But anytime you do something that's not a simple buying an item type of transaction, you do engage in some risk. For example, like buying a Guild Wars account off of someone. Officially, this is not permitted. So if anything goes wrong in an exchange like that, it's pretty much the buyer's fault if you get scammed out of money or something. You can't report something like that because if you did, ArenaNet would just say, "Well, we told you that you're not allowed to trade accounts amongst people." So then you just be SOL, you know? Not to say that I've never done any trades of this nature, but all I'm saying is, if you make a trade like that, you're pretty much on your own, and you just have to use your judgment about it. So you have to be aware that there is risk in any trade that you want to do that is not your simple buying an item for gold or swapping an item for an item. But I did have this past week one of these unusual type of trades. Master Zotos discovered one of my hobbies, or it's kind of a passion really, but he alluded to it in a post on the Guildcast message boards. So I dropped him a line and we started talking about it, and he said, "I've got some accessories and I'd be willing to trade for some good in-game items." And he said, "I'm really after a Tanzit's cleaver. What do you think? Do you want to trade?" So I said, "Sure, if you're serious about it." So it was like that day I coincidentally was able to buy a Tanzit's cleaver for 12K, and we traded, and I gave him the cleaver, and he sent me some really nice items in the mail. There's a leather case, and a two-finger aluminum case, and a really nice propane torch. You could tell these are classy pieces. These items aren't cheap. I mean, this is sweet. Then he also threw in a couple of really nice things, and I'm sorry, you probably don't care about this, but I'm just so happy with this trade that I'm going to show off my snobbery here, and you probably won't even know what I'm talking about. But one is an Orico Habano, and I guess this is, what would you call this? It's like a 45 ring gauge, so I guess you would call it a double Corona. It's like a lesser known line of Ernesto Carrillo, but you can't even tell. It looks and smells great. And the other is a Torpedo Arturo Fuente, and it looks really robust, looks good. Not like the silly little things that you would expect girls to like. I'm going to save these for a special occasion, maybe the next time we have another Guildcast event or something. But anyway, this is the best 12k that I have spent in-game, so thanks Master Zotos, you rock. And also thanks to you guys who hooked me up with some obsidian shards. I'm not looking for any handouts, but I do appreciate the price breaks. Since I started collecting for a set of fissure armor, I can't believe how broke I've become. And did you know that the tattoo and scar armors for the monk and necros also require shards as well now? They used to only need ecto. I think there's still only 8k instead of 15, but still. I reason that it's only fair that they also require shards, but that doesn't make me happier about it since I was just starting to think about getting those as well. I guess I'll just pull some sour grapes here and say, well, I didn't want it anyway, and I'm looking forward to getting some of that faction's armor anyway. The whole thing with the rollback made me start wondering again about how integrating the economy of Cantha with our current one is going to work. Will we be using the same type of currency, or what? I mean, I could speculate a lot about this, but I try not to, because we don't really know what's going to happen until it actually does. And so many rumors I've heard about updates and things have turned out to not be true, so I try not to say anything if I don't know it's actually the fact of what's going to happen. But on the bright side, we do finally have an actual release date for factions. It's on the main login screen as April 28th, and those who pre-order get early access 24 hours early. I think it's just like when the game first got released and we got in a day earlier for pre-ordering. So, that's cool. I'm looking forward to the preview weekend that's next week. I'm gonna see what's in store for all of us PvEers. And that's about it I'm gonna talk about. So, until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
Now, in this Basics of the Game segment, I'll go over what green items are and where they're found in the game. Green items are basically unique items, be it weapons, shields, or offhand focus items, that are found in only four certain areas of the game: the Crystal Desert, Sarl's Furnace, Grunt's Footprint, and the ruins of the Tomb of Primeval Kings. They are only obtained by killing a certain boss who is known to drop a particular green item, and most of these items are named after the boss who drops them. Some facts about unique items are that they are max items. For example, they have the best possible damage and energy bonus. They always have a requirement of 9 for their linked attribute. They cannot be dyed, salvaged, or upgraded, but they can be customized by a weaponsmith. And they will sell for a fixed price of 35 gold at the merchant, but I can't imagine why you'd ever want to do that when most of these will sell for thousands and thousands of gold to other players. Now, I won't be going over the stats for each green item, but I will be going over the items according to location and which boss drops them. Starting with the Crystal Desert, there's only one green item here called Kepkit's Refuge, and it is dropped by the level 26 Scarab Monk boss, Kepkit Marrowfeast, in Prophet's Path. In the ruins of the Tomb of Primeval Kings, there are 15 unique greens that can be dropped. All of these items are dropped by the level 13 Mesmer bosses known as the Darknesses at the very end of the sequence of battles in the tombs. For warriors, there's Victo's Battle Axe, Victo's Blade, Victo's Maul, Victo's Bulwark, which is a shield, and the Ogre Slaying Knife. For the ranger, there's Elswith's Recurve Bow and Elswith's Longbow. For the monk, there's Wenslaw's Faith, which is a staff, and Wenslaw's Chalice, which is a focus item. For necromancers, there's the staff Cole's Torment and the offhand item Cole's Gauntlet. For mesmers, there's Ilyana's staff and the focus item Ilyana's Mirror. And finally, for elementalists, there's the staff Millis' Pillar and the focus item Millis' Eye. Now, in Grunt's Footprint, there are 18 green items dropped. All bosses here and in Sarl's Furnace are level 28 and dwarves, with the exception of Flint Fleshcleaver, who is a golem. Now, starting with the warrior boss Thurgol Bludgeon Hammer. There's the Bludgeoner Hammer, Thurgol Stone Smasher, which is also a hammer, and Thurgol Shield. The Ranger boss, Gargash Thornbeard, drops Thornbeard's Hornbow, Stinger, and Gargash's Recurve Bow. Roth Yakslapper, the monk boss, drops Roth's Holy Rod, Roth's Icon, and the staff, the Yakslapper. The Necromancer boss, Morgriff Shadestone, drops Morgriff's Scepter, the Shadestone Focus Item, and Morgriff's Staff. Gorell Rockmolder, the Mesmer boss, drops Gorell's Cane, the Rockmolder Focus Item, and Gorell's Staff. And finally, Flint Fleshcleaver, the Elementalist boss, drops Flint's Wand, Flint's Artifact, or the staff Flint's Fleshcleaver. And now on to Sorrow's Furnace, which holds the most green items in one location at 53 of them. For warrior bosses, we have Malinon Threshhammer, who drops Malinon's Skull Crusher Hammer, Malinon's Malign Hammer, and Malinon's Shield. Grognard Gravelhead, who drops Grognard's Blade, Grognard's Sword, and Grognard's Defender, and Tanzit Razorstone, who drops the Razorstone Axe, Tanzit's Cleaver, and Tanzit's Defender. The Ranger bosses in Sorrow's Furnace include Gregor Boulderbeard, who drops Boulderbeard's Shortbow, Gregor's Zealous Shortbow, and Gregor's Shortbow. Drago Stoneherder drops Drago's Vampiric Flatbow and Drago's Flatbow. And then Tarnok Forgerunner, who drops Tarnok's Longbow, Tarnok's Recurve Bow, and Forgerunner, which is a longbow. The monk bosses in this area are Gardok Stone Soul, who drops Gardok's Holy Rod, the Stone Soul Focus Item, and Gardok's Staff. Brone Stoneheart drops Brone's Holy Rod, the Stoneheart Focus Item, and Brone's Staff. And finally, Eivor Helmhewer, who drops Eivor's Smiting Rod, Eivor's Icon, and Eivor's Staff. The Necromancer bosses include Bortok Bone Smelter, who drops Bortok's Bone Claw Wand, Bortok's Bone Cesta, and Bortok's Staff. Gordok Fleshweaver drops Gordok's Needle, Gordok's Hook Blood, and the Staff Fleshweaver. And then there's Vilnar Painforge, who drops Vilnar's Claw, Vilnar's Glove, and Vilnar's Staff. The Mesmer bosses are Korvald Willcrusher, who drops Korvald's Cane, Korvald's Chakram, and the Staff Willcrusher. Voker Grimshackles drops Voker's Cane, Voker's Chakram, and Voker's Staff. And then Garbok Handsmasher drops Garbok's Cane, Garbok's Chalice Focus Item, and the Staff Handsmasher. And finally, the Elementalist bosses in Sorrow's Furnace include Rago Kindlerock, who drops Rago's Flame Wand, the Kindlerock Focus Item, and Rago's Flame Staff. Galagord Stonestrike, who drops Galagord's Rod, Galagord's Stone Scroll, and Galagord's Stone Staff. And Runar Brimstone, who drops Brimstone Wand, the Brimstone Focus Item, and Runar's Brimstone Staff. In this Skills and Builds segment, I'll be talking about something only loosely related to green items, and that's because it's the only elite you can capture from the darknesses in the Tomb of Primeval Kings, which is my favorite place to farm greens. The skill is the Mesmer spell called Energy Surge. With this spell, target foe loses 4 to 9 energy. For each point of energy lost, that foe and foes in the area take 8 damage. This is an elite domination magic skill. The energy cost is 10, activation time of 2 seconds, and recharge time of 20 seconds. In addition to the darknesses, you can also capture this elite from Balisai the Arcane in the Iron Mines of Maladun mission, Malik the Virtuous in the Ring of Fire mission, Mercia the Smug in the Abaddon's Mouth mission, and the level 28 unnamed Mersat Mesmer boss in Ice Float, just west of Thunderhead Keep. A common combo built on this elite skill requires 3 or more Domination Mesmers equipped with Arcane Echo and Energy Surge. With Domination at 16, Energy Surge deals 80 damage to the foes in the area and 10 energy point loss to the target only. Doubling it with the Arcane Echo, it deals a total of 160 damage to the foes. And if three well-coordinated mesmers cast this build on three different foes close enough to each other, the total damage dealt becomes 480 to each foe in the area for about 4 to 5 seconds, which is more than enough to deliver panic among the opponents. So that's going to do it for this episode of Guildcast. Next week is going to be pretty huge with the preview event coming and everything, so I'll do my Q&A show before the weekend, then a review of the weekend on Sunday or Monday night of next week. We'll also have a contest after next weekend that I'll be announcing on the next show, and it'll be a running contest. I've added a lot of great prizes to the contest page, so check that out when you get a chance to. You can check out the contact info button on the guildcast.com website for everything you need to contact me or Lady Sinea by email, voicemail, MySpace, or message board. So, until next time, tell your friends, tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Sean, this is Shadow of a Count. I left you a message on the board last night. I am back in the academy and going to be in the Old Ascalon this afternoon. I would just like a show on Mesmer, Elementalist, either or. I want to see if I can either be a nuker or an interrupter or what's out there for me. So I'm 6th level now and anxious to burn it up to 20. Thanks, man, for all the podcasts. I'm going through them the 3rd time. My 2nd week playing. Thanks, man.